Hi, I'm Ben McKenzie, and not Elizabeth Flux. Welcome to Pratchett, the monthly Terry Pratchett Book Club podcast. Each month, we normally discuss one of Terry Pratchett's books, or short stories, or games, or something else with a special guest. But as you've hopefully heard already, this is an emergency replacement episode prompted by some scheduling issues we just couldn't solve. But we've decided to embrace the chaos and make an episode centered around this year's inaugural Terry Pratchett Day theme, Start in the Wrong Place. I say we because, though Liz isn't able to join us this episode, I wanted to share some of your stories of starting in the wrong place, as well as giving my own ideas about where you might want to start with Terry Pratchett. But let's actually start with the basics. Terry Pratchett Day is an annual celebration of Terry Pratchett and his work, marked on Terry's birthday, April the 28th. I'm not entirely sure when it started. The earliest reference I could find was from 2017 for a streamed online reading of some of Terry's children's books, set up by the publisher. There are also references from the official publisher's website for the books, terrypratchettbooks.com, from around 2021, and it's from that year that it seems to be more consistently have been celebrated on the 28th of April. That one's quite delightful, that webpage. They have a recipe for banana daiquiris, a favourite of Terry's, with the suggestion that you make one, drink a toast to Terry with it, and then make a donation to one of his preferred charities for Alzheimer's research or orangutan preservation. Fans have also used the term Terry Pratchett Day, though not all that consistently. I found blog and social media posts about Terry Pratchett Day, but often they were on the anniversary of his death, which is 10 years ago, next March, if you can believe it, or even on the glorious 25th of May, rather than on his birthday. There's even an old Terry Pratchett Day Facebook group, though it's mostly empty now. What we used to call a cobweb, if it was a website. But surely there's a better metaphor for a lost and mostly empty Facebook group or page. A faceless book? A faded page? Maybe it's zuckered out? Oh, I wish Liz was here. Anyway, this year marks a bit of a more official direction and greater visibility for Terry Pratchett Day, with the Terry Pratchett Estate announcing an official theme for the first time, and in 2024 that theme is Start in the Wrong Place. The idea is to celebrate the fact that there's no wrong or right place to start with Terry Pratchett's work. So as they put it, let's truly celebrate the joy and chaos to be found in these many routes through the Discworld and beyond. Now, this is obviously a marketing exercise. The website comes complete with graphics for every Discworld book to share in all the different social media sizes using the new edition Penguin covers, which are about to be released in the US through Harper Perennial for the first time. But it's still a nice and wholesome marketing exercise, and it's about books, and Terry Pratchett books in particular. And what a theme, what a great theme to choose. The Discworld is, after all, often seen as a daunting series to get into. 41 books. That's a lot. And of course, there's lots of extra stuff, as you know, if you've been listening to our podcast over the last 76 episodes, whatever we're up to now. It's a long time. There are reading order guides, there are charts. We've talked about where to start before. We've talked about doing a flowchart, which we still haven't got around to, but we will one of these days. But look, really, the truth is you can more or less start with any of these books. They're really not much like a traditional fantasy series. I've always thought of them more as like a series of films. Right? They're set in the same universe. They have a lot of the same characters, not always exactly the same ones, but each one is largely self-contained. And they don't even have any after-the-credit scenes with explicit links to movies and stuff that you've never heard of, right? So they're pretty great, and you can really read any of them without needing to read any of the others first. But I know some of you are listening to this and just want some advice. Like, where do you start? I don't know why you're listening to this episode, if that's what you've come for, but maybe someone else in your life is asking and you want some guidance for them. So what would I say? If you want my advice, I would say Men-at-Arms. We chose it for episode one of the podcast for a reason, you know, and I think it is still a really good smorgasbord, as we put it all the way back in that episode, of stuff from the Discworld. But there's so many good choices. Going Postal, Mort, Weird Sisters, The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents, Truckers. Yeah, Truckers, right? You don't even have to start with the Discworld. Or Monstrous Regiment. Look, any of those will do. I mean, if you're into old school fantasy, maybe The Color of Magic or The Carpet People. Strata, if you're more of a sci-fi fan, maybe Hogfather, if you really love Christmas. I mean, those are a lot of suggestions. But as we've said before, really, you can't go wrong if you read a few blurbs and start with the one that sounds most interesting or funny to you. Which book is the right one is a pretty individual choice, which brings me to the main theme of this episode. Now, I could have gone through all the books and tried to evaluate which ones would be the best or worst places to start, and I did think about doing that, but actually, really what I want to do is to share stories about where some of you started. Because as it turns out, when you ask people how they started in the wrong place with Discworld or Terry Pratchett more broadly, you get a lot of great and very different answers. In our case, around 90 responses across our various social media accounts. So thank you so much to everyone who responded. I won't get to tell all of your stories, but I absolutely read all of them and I love them. And I will be linking to those public posts where you can find these stories. So if you want to go and read the long versions of some of them yourself, you absolutely can. And join the conversation. Add your own story. We'd love to hear more. Well, let's get into it. Now, of course, most people, this is the most popular response, in fact, told us that they started in the quote-unquote right place with The Color of Magic. Though, famously, Terry Pratchett is on record in a speech that he gave at a science fiction convention called NoRizCon in 2004, saying that it was not the right place. In fact, what he said was, "Nobody ever taught me to write. No one ever told me what I was doing wrong. My first novel was published by the first publisher I sent it to, and so I've been learning as I go, and I find it now rather embarrassing that people beginning with the Discworld start with The Color of Magic and The Light Fantastic, which I don't think are some of the best books to start with." This is the author saying this, folks. Do not start at the beginning with Discworld. Whew, that is rough, Terry. You're so mean on yourself there. But, you know, not everyone agrees. Twitter user Desert Hearts Fan reckons that folks who think it's the wrong place to start maybe don't know or don't care what he was parodying. And look, if you go back and listen to our episode about The Color of Magic, it's absolutely true that it is very much based on parody of other existing fantasy of the time, not all of which is still famous or well known today. Myra Michigan, who's also on Twitter, laughed her ass off, in her own words, at The Color of Magic. She said, "I'd read all the fantasy novels it was sending up. I like rereading them in publication order because I notice things Terry says over and over and see the amazing character development." And if you've been following our podcast, you know we have seen some of the things that he says over and over. And yeah, the characters do get much more interesting and complex as time goes on. Steve Leahy probably has the last word on this subject. Steve's a regular contributor for questions to the podcast. And out of all the dozen or so people who told us they started at the actual start, he was the one who wrote a poem on Twitter. "In my youth," said the Steve, now shorn of his grey locks, "I started with Color of Magic, and I read every book in order since then. It wasn't so terribly tragic." No, neither is that poem. That is quite delightful. And look, full disclosure, in case you've forgotten, I started with The Color of Magic too. Also, in my youth, I would have been about 13, I think, 13 or 14. And while I still like it a lot, and you can go back and listen to some of the things that we said about it on the show, I do think it hits different in 2024 than in 1983 or even 1992 when I would have read it for the first time. So I can understand that it didn't work for everyone. Like Beth on Blue Sky, who began at the beginning and thought, "Ugh, another parody fantasy with a few lame puns and a lead schmuck." As she put it, incompetent protagonists were legion then, so she ignored the entire series for decades and then finally found out her error, as she put it, and had so many fine books, in all caps, to read, which was a splendid gift. And yes, you know, sometimes you try something and it's not for you, and then you realize that other parts of that series or collection of books or whatever it might be are for you. I think Doctor Who's quite the same. Sorry, listeners, you have to drink now. That's part of our drinking game. But, you know, so much of Doctor Who is not actually that good. But then when you find one that is good and you realize that when it's good, it's not like any other TV show, and you get into it, oh, you're on a train because you're going to find all those excellent stories and all the ones that you love, and you're going to enjoy them. And I think Pratchett has a similar kind of appeal, that when you find the books of his that you enjoy, it's difficult to find anything else that's quite like it. So, yeah, but I understand, you know, not everybody likes the color of magic and gets on board with it. Rachel Burzma Plug was on Facebook, I think, and she was mostly a reader of serious high fantasy at the time she found the color of magic and didn't really know what to make of it, so she abandoned it. And then she says, many years later, I found an omnibus edition of Guards, Guards, Men-at-Arms, and Feet of Clay in a different library, and I was hooked. So, you know, sometimes you'll bounce off the first one that you try, but there might be just something about it that says, but I think it might be worth trying another one. And of course, that's the difficulty, is that someone who's written so many books over such a long time and developed so much and changed direction so much after those first few books, well, it's hard if someone starts with them to explain how different some of those later ones are. I mean, and look, you know, it's possible to over-egg that. I think if you really don't like The Color of Magic, there's a fair chance you might not like a lot of the other Discworld as well, but particularly the later stuff might be more your speed. But of course, The Color of Magic isn't the actual start. I mean, not if you're talking about Pratchett's career as a novelist more broadly. And a couple of people did say that they started with his actual first novel, The Carpet People, like Crafty Fungi Lady on Instagram, who started specifically with the abridged audiobook of The Carpet People on cassette in 2004. That is quite late to be listening to things on cassette. I was impressed by this story. But Crafty Fungi Lady says, I was sick, 15 years old, and my mum picked it up from the library because it was read by Baldrick, who, of course, is Tony Robinson, who has read all of the abridged editions of Terry Pratchett's work. And this is a, you know, an FYI, you know, a PSA. For those who don't know this, if you've only listened to those audiobook versions, they are abridged. You are missing out on some of the plot and the jokes and other stuff. Pratchett famously hated this, but it was how it was done. If you want to hear the unabridged ones, there are other audiobooks which are unabridged, including the more recent Penguin ones. But Crafty Fungi Lady goes on to say, my first Discworld was Sorcery, read by Nigel Planer on CD this time. I just randomly borrowed whichever audio or paper books were available in the library until I ran out. And I think, yeah, we've all had that experience when we get onto it. We're like, wow, there's so many of these. Where do I find the other ones? Now on Reddit, StunningFox77 said, I was given the German translation of The Carpet People at a book fair in school way back in 1997 because you like that fantasy stuff. Oh, man, yeah. People said that kind of thing to me all the time in school. I remember that. At the time, I hadn't yet learned to tell people to stuff off because I preferred, and still do, books in English. But being the polite soul I was, I gave it a whirl and was hooked on the very first line of the intro. It is a good intro to The Carpet People. If you haven't read it, check it out. It was just so very different, says Stunning Fox. So I looked for other stuff and found the terrible translation of Color of Magic, which put me right off. Now, this is a whole thing that I think we've talked about briefly on the show before. And in fact, a guest who's going to pop up a little bit later, one of our listeners, Sven, has talked about this in one of our bonus podcast episodes. But there have been a number of different translators. There's been two main translators, but I think there's also been a third one in Germany. And a lot of people do not think very much of the translator who did the first editions of the Discworld translated into German. They were written very much as being aimed for children. And the later translations are seen by most fans, certainly the ones we've heard from, as superior. So I can totally understand what happened with Stunning Fox there. But they continue to say, a few years later, I finally read Witches Abroad in the original and never looked back. I lost The Carpet People and I still don't like The Live Fantastic and The Color of Magic. Well, that's okay. You know, if there are 41 books and there's only a couple that you don't like, you're doing pretty well. And of course, then there's the non-Discworld ones as well that you do like. Now, most people who started with The Carpet People, they're talking about the 1992 version, certainly all the ones that we heard from, which is the one that was rewritten by Pratchett and then republished by great demand from fans and publishers once he'd already gotten famous. We did, however, get a few early adopters, but these are mostly folks who started with the first few Discworld books in the mid-80s, like Derek Binns, who started with The Color of Magic, or Mark Phillips, who contacted us, who found The Color of Magic in a bookshop in 1985 or 1986 and said he laughed aloud at a book with a pun in the first paragraph. It's a great start. It's got a great start, The Color of Magic. I don't care what anybody says. I'm sorry, Liz. I love The Cosmic Turtle. It's great. But nobody who contacted us started with the first edition of The Carpet People in 1971, although some people must have. I mean, presumably people who knew Terry did start with his first published book. What an introduction that would have been. I have read the original. We've talked about it in a special bonus episode of the podcast that was released on YouTube as part of some celebrations with the Australian Discworld Convention. And we'll probably talk about it again, but if you can get your hands on a copy, which is difficult, they're very expensive because there was not a big print run, worth it. If you can borrow one, it's fun. It's like a slightly weird Lord of the Rings. It's not funny, not in the sense that it fails to be funny, in the sense that it's not a comedy. But anyway, we did get one person who began with pre-Discworld Pratchett. So there were other people who began with non-Discworld Pratchett, but it was all stuff he wrote after the Discworld made him famous. But Scurra on Mastodon told us that they started with Strata from the library, probably in 1982 or 1983, which they said, I read well before I got to Ringworld, which it is broadly a parody of. If you're not familiar with the book, we did an episode about it in the last year or so. Whereas, Scurra says, I had read most of the stuff parodied in The Colour of Magic by the time that appeared. And for the record, I just want to say I think both of them work without needing to have read the works that they're parodying, but there's a certain extra fun to be had if you do know what's going on, that's for sure. But look, that covers the early and pre-Discworld days. But we also did have folks who told us they started at the other end of the Discworld series. Now, not right at the end, but the latest one, anyone nominated as their first, was Thud, which is just 7 from the end, right? And it's the second last of the Watch books. So it is a pretty odd starting place, and not least because it draws more than is typical for a Discworld book on what's come before. It's got all the stuff about dwarves and trolls and their cultures, Vime's previous adventure in Uberworld with the Low King from the Fifth Elephant, which we'll talk more about in a minute, and the Watch is almost in its final form. So there's like lots of recurring and supporting characters. But look, here's what Reddit user Cass Marlowe had to say about starting with Thud. I was reading whatever our local library had available at the time, and since I'd been curious about Discworld for a while, I just took some books with me on a holiday in 2007. And the first book I read was Thud, and while it was a little confusing, it instantly cemented my love for the whole series. There was stuff I missed, of course, like Vimes being possessed by the Summoning Dark. That was a complete surprise to me at the end because I didn't know the themes of his character enough to pick up on the hints that in hindsight were much more obvious. The other books I read during that summer holiday were Going Postal and Thief of Time. Also pretty late entries, but also excellent. I was very hyped and read most of the series afterwards in a short period of time, also completely out of order, and convinced at least 4 other people to read them all too. I only read the books in order after I bought my own copies. It was definitely very fun to go back and read all the other books about the City Watch, developing into what I already knew and learning what some allusions to prior events were all about. So even if you can consider starting at the end to be definitely wrong, there's still benefits to it. You know, it's a lovely anticipation of knowing where things are going to end up and going back and reading your way back to the point where you know what's going on. I mean, it's a trope of storytelling to do this on purpose, and it's actually not one that Pratchett uses very often, where he sort of starts at the end and then goes back telling the story out of order. It's not really something that he does very often, but you can do it for yourself just by reading the books out of order. So Thud is pretty late. We also had one person, surprisingly only one person, I would have thought it'd be more, who said Monstrous Regiment was their first. Now, that is only a few books earlier in the series, and it is a standalone book and often cited as one of the best. So, yeah, I was amazed that not that many people told us that. But, you know, I also asked how people got from that first book they read to listening to a podcast about Terry Pratchett or posting on Terry Pratchett forums on the internet. And this answer about Monstrous Regiment, this is a doozy. I won't read the whole thing because it's quite long, but it's a really great ride. And this is from KarmaGirl314 on Reddit. So I picked up a copy of Monstrous Regiment at random at my college library's used book sale in 2008 for $2. I devoured it. Really is underrated in all the Discworld novel rankings that pop up on this subreddit. The only thing about starting there is that the Watch characters go over your head a little bit. I liked Vimes from his meeting with Polly, but I didn't really appreciate him as much as I would have done if I'd read the series in order. After that, I raced back to the library to find more books and read Going Postal, Equal Rights, and Carpe Jugulum in that order. I had to do a little bit of internet searching after a few pages of Going Postal. I'd never encountered a series that featured different characters in different books. I was also a little bit confused by the writing style and tone in Equal Rights after the bright, shiny energy of Going Postal. I went back to the internet and started looking up publication dates, and that's when I began to realise how big the series was. After those first four books, I started looking for them in order, searching various county libraries and buying paperbacks as a last resort, broke college student as I was. And this went on for several years. Now, the part of the story, this is me breaking in here, that you won't expect is that Karmagirl 314 then becomes a major figure in Discworld fandom. This all started their journey towards joining the North American Discworld Convention Planning Committee, helping to run the 2017 and 2019 cons, and getting to meet all kinds of people in between, including Colin Smythe, Rob Wilkins, and Neil Gaiman. Now, that happened at Comic-Con for Karmagirl and led to getting a signed poster of all the cast of Good Omens Season 1, or most of them who were there, and then eventually auctioning that for charity at the 2019 convention for over $1,000. Amazing. And look, please go and read the full post. It's a really great story. But I feel a bit weird. Like, I'm quite enjoying reading out other people's stories, but this one, it's a big one. I think you should go and read it for yourself. It's great. Still looking at that sort of later end, The Fifth Elephant is actually a surprisingly popular place to start. It was kind of in the top of our lists. And we got a lot of different books, by the way, but a lot of them were just one person. But there were sort of a small collection that were like 2, 3, 4 people that were not obvious starting places. We had a few that were more obvious, like Mort and things like that. But The Fifth Elephant, surprisingly popular. Even Liz thought she started there, although, as it turned out, she'd read Truckers many years before. But still, it was one of our top responses. Now, Pemberley intern on Blue Sky told us that they started with an advanced copy, or an advanced reader's copy, or ARC is the publisher's term. So they started with an advanced copy of The Fifth Elephant, and then they bounced all around the Discworld. But it wasn't easy being a Pratchett fan in the US, as Pemberley intern says. It wasn't until I joined Blue Sky, so that's got to be in the last year or two, that I even found a huge US-based Discworld fan base, they said. I have known and worked with many sci-fi and fantasy fans my entire adult life, and despite trying to sell Pratchett to everyone, rarely encountered other fans in the wild. And it is true that even today, when he's pretty massively popular, he's never quite had the same sort of profile or impact in the US as in the UK and Australia and other places. But, you know, that exposure to an advanced reader's copy of The Fifth Elephant might resonate with some of you, because it seems like it happened to a lot of people. On Reddit, username My Tortoise Has a Past, great username, told us that they got a free advanced reader's copy of The Fifth Elephant when they worked in a bookstore and immediately fell in love with the world. And then they went on to say, I had the good fortune of meeting Terry Pratchett, and he said many people in the US discovered him through that ARC. And I did a little bit of research into this, because I was sure, like, there must be something to this, right? And yes, sure enough, this was part of a major push by Pratchett's US publisher, HarperCollins. And in the year 2000, they put Pratchett on their mainstream fiction list rather than in the sort of, you know, cult sci-fi or fantasy bin. And that started with The Fifth Elephant. So as part of this change, they published a special edition of 5,000 advanced reader's copies of The Fifth Elephant, and they sent them all around the US. And this special edition included a 16-page appendix called The World of Terry Pratchett, which had like info on the characters and locations of the Discworld. It had a jigsaw, apparently. I'm not sure how you do that in a book unless it's like, cut this out. And a non-map, although I'm really not very sure what that is. If you have one of those copies, or the special editions of the first 3 Discworld novels that they published after that to help get people into it, which also included this same World of Terry Pratchett section in the back, we would love to get some more details about that. So please let us know. But yeah, apparently that is quite a common way for people to have discovered Pratchett in 2000 Amazing. I didn't even know that existed. So there you go. I don't think that World of Terry Pratchett stuff has been collected anywhere else. But if you know differently, please let us know if you know. Now, that was still not the only sort of later book. We also heard from people who started with Thief of Time, which, again, weird choice. It's very complicated. It's got all kinds of weird stuff going on. But Sophie Cleverly on Twitter started with it after seeing it in a school book fair and thinking the cover was really unusual. And that's a theme we'll return to later. Sophie says, I had no idea who Terry Pratchett was, but I was instantly in love. I wrote a review of it and won a Blue Peter badge. Now, if you're not familiar with Blue Peter, this is a children's TV show on UK television. You know, they do all kinds of cool stuff and they invite people to send things into them and into competitions, and you can win a badge for doing all kinds of stuff. So that's cool. You won a Blue Peter badge from reviewing Thief of Time. Incredible. Maria Christina, there's three A's there. Sorry. Pronouncing Reddit usernames is a real trip. But anyway, Maria Christina has a great story about starting with Thief of Time. I was always a quick reader who procrastinated when it came to books selected for me rather than by me. So I'd left my school's summer reading assignment for the week or two before sophomore year was to start. Only much later did I put together that the three books on the list were all mysteries. At the time, I was only paying enough attention to approximate a passing grade on the test we'd be given the first day of classes. So I reread only the parts of The Hound of the Baskervilles that I didn't remember seeing on Wishbone as a kid. I skimmed Calendar Square, and the only thing I can tell you today is that the cover was blue. And then I got to the third book while killing time during rehearsals for a community theatre production of Guys and Dolls, populated by school year faces. The cast included my boyfriend, and I'd lobbied our band director to hire me on one of the woodwind books so I could be in his orbit after dark without having to wheedle my strict mother. Most of us in the pit orchestra were finishing summer reading when not called on to play our instruments. The older students were an informal resource, since only one of the three books on a grades list was ever rotated out at a time. I'll always remember turning to the French horn on my right and expressing impressed surprise that this wild book followed the dry by comparison realism of the other two on the 10th grade list. She asked me what I meant. I told her that the prose was so much more entertaining and that there wasn't a single word I felt I could skip over, and plot-wise, the spot I was currently on was a good example of the comedy I was mildly shocked to find endorsed by our serious school. She asked what part I was on. I told her it was the chocolate guerrilla warfare. She was confused. Then I was confused. Then the confusion spread out through the pit like ripples in a pond. Long story medium, my school had assigned A Thief of Time by Tony Hillerman. That was 23 years ago. The actor boyfriend is my husband, and we still laugh about it. I realize, you know, as a comedian, I know that I ruined that for you by telling you that it was going to be about Thief of Time, but I still think that is hilarious. Now, obviously, Maria Christina is from America, as were most, I think it's fair to say, of our respondents for whatever reason. I don't know if that's just because more of you listen to the podcast or more of you are active on social media or what the deal is. So there are a few references in there that I reasonably understand, but not entirely. But for context, we're talking about grade 10 there. So this is sort of getting towards the end of high school. Look, we are exposed to so much American media, and yet I still don't really understand how American high school works. As I understand it, they have primary school or whatever they call it, grade school, then they have a middle school, and then they have high school, and high school, I think, starts in year 9 or equivalent. So I don't know. I don't really know how that works. But anyway, that's what I understand was going on there. But let's speak instead of another country, because I don't really go in for patriotism very much, but it did tickle me that quite a few people started with The Last Continent, which is not a book I would ever recommend necessarily starting with unless you were Australian and wanted to like see someone else just pull out all the stops doing all the cliches and stuff, and getting quite deep on some of them, as you would hopefully know if you'd listened to our episode about it. But Jewel E on Facebook says that she read Bill Bryson's Down Under, which is a book about traveling around Australia, and then a friend suggested Terry Pratchett's The Last Continent as a mockumentary travelogue, which I guess is one way of describing it. Julie was also one of several people who found the Shakespearean themes in some of the books helpful, She said, I don't think I ever finished Macbeth for high school English, but Weird Sisters got me through the unit, which is, look, either kind of a stunning endorsement of Terry Pratchett or a stunning indictment of the school system's treatment of Macbeth that you can read Weird Sisters and it gets you through. Kelly Houlihan on Twitter now knows that The Last Continent is a weird place to start, in their words, but doubly so since they describe themselves as a big in-order person usually. So afterwards, they went right back to the beginning. They go on to say, I'd been meaning to get Colour of Magic from the library, but I kept forgetting, and Last Continent was right there. The next however many months was interlibrary loans until I was caught up. Ah, interlibrary loans. They are one of the greatest inventions in all of human history. If you're not familiar with this, if you're not a big library user, first of all, definitely recommend it. Get to your local library. But secondly, library services will often hook up with other library services. And if they don't have the book you want, you can order it from another library and they'll deliver it to the library that you are a member of. So, yeah, get onto that if you haven't already. Kelly was not the only person who started with Last Continent, so Kelly and Julie, and also Aka Lorraine on Reddit, who says they enjoyed fantasy books and I was browsing books in my local Borders. Of course, I'm a discerning reader. The book has to have a lot of pages because I'm a poor high school student without a job and I need it to last. This was at the time. I'm not quite sure how long ago this was. Then I see a shelf of a single author, always a good sign. And one of the thickest books on that shelf is The Last Continent. Possibly more attractive was the cover. A kangaroo had a wizard's hat on. I'm not going to say no to a wizard kangaroo, and I was not disappointed. From that point on, I had a very strange journey through Discworld. I didn't follow an order. I looked at whichever books were on the shelf at the bookstore, and then I chose the one that had the most pages. I don't recommend my technique. No, I don't recommend it either, because while some of the longest ones are really good, some of them, well, look, they might not be my first pick. Certainly not to read before the shorter ones. But amazing. Thank you for sharing that, Aka Lorraine. And in one of the most Aussie responses, this is the last one about The Last Continent. Duchess of Blue on Reddit reported to us, The Last Continent was loaned to me by a friend of my parents. I'm an Australian. It was during a period of drought with water restrictions in place, and I read it while on vacation at the beach, which a lot of people would have done when there were water restrictions in place, because, you know, at least you can get in the water in the sea. You know, there's no drought in the sea. There's only a drought on the land. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. But yeah, look, that's a real thing. That's happened and not that long ago, and it could well happen again here. We'll see what happens with the weather and the climate in Australia. But yes, a very Australian way to read Last Continent indeed. Now, I also think that we're getting sort of further back towards the start now, so this is starting to make a bit more sense. But Reaper Man, I think, is also a weird place to start. I mean, it consists of these two largely unrelated stories. It's also the only death book, which barely features any of his human relatives or employees. So it's mostly, in his parts, him getting on with being death. But you know what? It is very funny. And I do love it. I do really love it, even if the whole two plots thing is a bit weird. But it really seemed to work for a few folks who responded to us. Dave, of the newest Discworld podcast on the scene, which is called Dining Table Discworld, started with Reaper Man. Though his life partner and podcast partner, Kathy, started with Equal Rights. But, you know, having started with two different books, it has not been a problem for them. They're both into Discworld and they're both into chatting about it over the dinner table and recording it as a podcast. So do check out that show. Chris Ingersoll on Mastodon also started with a version of Reaper Man. Although, as he said, where the two halves of the narrative weren't in different fonts, so it was even more disjointed than usual, but it was still enough to get me hooked. In fact, I think that specific copy of Reaper Man started a bunch of my friends on Discworld. Which is great. I mean, this is, Pratchett's one of those authors where people do lend their copies around. I think Good Omens is famously the kind of book that most people own three copies of, if they're really into it, because, you know, one to keep on the shelf, one to reread yourself, and one to lend out to other people, that you probably won't get back. But, you know, we've heard talk of these editions of Reaper Man that have the two different fonts, and I kind of thought I hadn't really seen that in action. But actually, then I went back and looked at my old Corgi paperback, and it does. It kind of does have that. I mean, it's subtle, and they're not radically different fonts, but they are two different ones. And I don't think I even really noticed when we read it for the podcast at the time. or at least not that it was deliberate. I don't think I'm a fan of it, the two different fonts. It just accentuates how much the two plots don't have anything to do with each other. So I, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Whew. Now, we're getting into some other weird choices. So, for example, only two people started with Interesting Times, which is, yeah, I think a weird book to start with, of course. JP on Twitter said they started with Interesting Times and then went back and forth through the series afterwards. The other person who started with Interesting Times is a longtime listener and fellow podcaster, Sven Uckerman, who recorded a little podcast telling his story. So here he is. Take it away, Sven.
So, hello, Pratchett. Nice to be here again. Ben asked about how did you start with Pratchett? I started in Realschule, middle school, around 10 years old, when we went to a school trip, to like a two-week school holiday thing. And, you know, I was a bit scatterbrained and forgot something to read for a long train ride down from the middle of Germany down to the Alps. So we had some time left in the train station. So I went into the local bookstore store in the train station. They normally have like shitty books and everything, and was like, okay, I need something to really read. And then I saw the cover of Interesting Times, or the English version. Of course, I saw the German version. But then it's like, oh, there's a wizard on the cover. There's strange art. And I like fantasy, I guess. So I bought it, read it, and I found Cohen the Barbarian totally funny and everything, and the Unseen University. So I read that book during the trip, and I think the next one was the Australia one, because, yeah, RuneSwind ended up in Australia. So I read that, and then Eric, and then I started with Light Fantasy and the first Discworld books, and basically I followed RuneSwind's journey through the Discworld and then ended up reading the other books, falling in love with the witches. Yeah, and then everything else followed. I actually saw Terry once live. I think it was 1995 or so. I recently started reading Pratchett, and the parents of my friend then, we both were reading Pratchett and sharing books, and they were like, hey, yeah, the author is coming to Göttingen. Let's go there. And he signed Pyramids for me. And for my friend, he signed Good Omens. After the session was over, Sasha looked over to me and like, oh, I don't like the books too much. I was just there because my parents said I should go there. So I actually have two signed books of Terry Pratchett, one with my name and one of the name of the friend coming with me. And, well, the Terry Pratchett collection grew after that. And now I'm wearing some Terry Pratchett tattoos, and I'm a little Terry Pratchett fan, and yeah, how did I get into Terry Pratchett? By forgetting something to read for a school trip. I think that's a short answer.
Oh, thank you, Sven. So lovely to hear from you again. And if you speak German, you can listen to Sven's podcast. I mean, if you don't speak German, you can listen to it. It just won't make any sense. I've listened to an episode, and I didn't know what to make of it. But it's called Ochmeno. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I believe that it is German for oh no. And it is a podcast about stories of disaster, particularly engineering disasters. So if that appeals to you and you speak German, please do check out Sven's podcast, Ochmeno. Now, look, Pyramids is getting pretty early. We're into the first seven now, right? And this was quite a few people's first Discworld novel, but it wasn't a hit with everyone who tried it. It did work for Zoe Butcher from Twitter when she was 13, and it also worked for Dave2718, who on Instagram said he swapped it in a hostel for a Jason Bourne novel and suspects he got the better end of the deal. I've never read any of the Jason Bourne novels. I've only seen the films with Matt Damon, so I couldn't begin to comment, but I think possibly, yes, you did get the better end of the deal, particularly if you went on to really love Terry Pratchett. And then on Reddit, we heard from Slow Calendar 3267. I'd seen lots of Pratchett books in the adult section of my library. I wasn't really interested in them, but I'd already read through most of the youth section, and as a teenager, I was desperate to prove how adult and mature my taste was. Oh, we've all been there. I think I was hoping to impress the librarians, lol. So I picked up a book randomly, which happened to be Pyramids. I hated it. It was super boring and weird, the slightly incesty plot threw me off completely, and I don't think I got any of the jokes. So I read the book and decided this Pratchett fellow was not for me, and was in fact a bad writer. A couple of years later, I was an older teenager at my neighbouring city's library, facing the same old problem. I devoured most of the books aimed at my age group. Desperate times and all that, so I grabbed another Pratchett book. Couldn't tell you which one. At first, the book still weren't to my taste, but I was stubborn to prove to myself that this time I was a real adult. So I sloughed through the books. The witch books were at first the most interesting ones I found, although very different from my usual books, but it was only after I found the City Watch books that everything fell into place. I don't remember if I fell in love with Vimes immediately, or if it took a couple of books, but oh man, almost 15 years later, I'm still completely obsessed with him. I've even lured my boyfriend to read Discworld. But I never did pick up Pyramids again. Wow. Look, it isn't for everyone, and it is a weird book in that it's, you know, got different parts. There was a bit of a discussion on this thread about the sort of the incest bits of the book. We talked about it so long ago. It was like on the fifth episode of the podcast, so that's like a lot of years ago now. But I don't think we found those to be... like, it's just a few jokes. Look, again, it's a long time ago, but they didn't make a big impression on us at the time. But as Slow Calendar said, you know, they were used to young adult novels, and you don't really find that kind of stuff in young adult novels. So fair enough. Fair enough. David Butler on our Discord also told a story about Pyramids. I was lent Pyramids by my year 11 English teacher and Eric by a friend the same year. I really enjoyed Pyramids, but I remember finding Eric a bit confusing. I read Colour of Magic and Light Fantastic next, which I actually found very pleasant, and then read various ones in no particular order. I never read any in the year they were released, and only recently have tried to read them or buy them in some sort of order. I did The Witches, then Death and Susan, and now I'm on the watch. Thank you, David. And David is also, every time David finishes one of the books, it's lovely. He goes back and listens to our episode about that book. So he's listening to Pratchett out of order, which I think is a nice kind of parallel to the way some people have read through the books themselves. But David didn't actually start with Pyramids. Instead, he was one of several people who didn't start with a book at all. David says, I suppose I should say I started with the Cosgrove Hall stop-motion animated Truckers, since it is the first Pratchett thing I've ever consumed, though I didn't know at the time it was based on a Pratchett book. Now, I think I talked about this when we covered Truckers. I love that stop-motion animated thing, but I cannot remember for the life of me if I saw it before or after I started reading Pratchett's novels, because I would have seen it on ABC TV. So, yeah, I don't know. But look, this was not an uncommon story. A lot of people told us that their inroad to Terry Pratchett was not one of the books, but one of the many other things that have been made, either adapting his work or based on his work in some way. For example, Metal Belly Lives. I'm sorry, I should pronounce that correctly. Metal Belly Lives! It's in all caps on Twitter. Started with the graphic novels of The Colour of Magic and The Light Fantastic, but goes on to say, I wish I hadn't, because a lot of the jokes do not translate across. And look, they're not as bad as the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy comic, which I remember being appalled at the way some of the jokes were mistranslated into visuals, because they used the exact text from the book, but then the visuals didn't match the text. They did something that they thought was more visually interesting. Oh, I was outraged. But I don't remember it being that bad in the Discworld ones, but, you know, it's been a while since I read them, so maybe I'll have another look for that when I read them again. E. Kelly, also on Twitter, started with the Discworld 1995 PC game. This is a graphic adventure video game. We've mentioned it, I think, briefly on the podcast before. We'll cover it, hopefully, at some point. But E. Kelly also says, I do not recommend this as a starting point. No one else told us this time around, but I have actually heard from some people that it's not that bad a place to start. If you're really into those sort of graphic adventure games at the time, it wasn't a million miles away from the other ones, but it was much funnier than a lot of them. So for a lot of people, it was an intro, and a lot of people still think of Rincewind as having Eric Idle's voice because he played the voice of Rincewind in those games. Bedroom Books on Instagram started with the Colour of Magic miniseries, the TV live-action adaptation made by The Mob for Sky Television in the UK, because I found the DVD in a charity shop, then I found out about the books. And most people starting outside the books actually did begin with a TV adaptation, but not the live-action ones. The most common non-book answer that we got was one of the Cosgrove Hall animated adaptations from the late 1990s. Grandson of Odin on Reddit saw the Soul Music animated series as a kid. Had no idea what was going on, but found it really fun and compelling. I started watching the Weird Sisters one, but I had to stop because there were witches in it, and my mum wasn't having any of that. Decades later, I remembered the show and looked it up to find it was a whole book series. I watched The Colour of Magic and Hogfather, and then I got all the audiobooks and found out just what I'd been missing. Now I'm going through my second run through the audiobooks, and will always go through in publication order. One day, when my kids are a bit older, I plan to buy the whole collection of books and read them to my kids. Hopefully my daughter will take after Granny and not Nanny. Aww. I think if I had a daughter, I would be exceptionally pleased if she turned out to be a Nanny Ogg type. Maybe not when she was very young. But come on. If you turn out like either of those women, I'd be very happy. BM on Mastodon started with that animated Weird Sisters, which Grandson of Odin was not allowed to watch, which led them to read Equal Rights and question where this series had been my whole life. And look, this is a kind of common sentiment that came up in many of the answers that we got, which was, I couldn't believe that this existed and I didn't know about it. I felt a bit the same. I started with The Colour of Magic because I ran out of Douglas Adams books and my mum went into a bookshop and asked, what do you got? What's next? And I, you know, a good choice. It worked out for me. But this is, yeah. And I was like, well, I didn't know about these books. How did I not know about them? And I tried it with other authors since then, going, oh, maybe this is the next Terry Pratchett. It's never quite worked for me since. Maybe a little bit Jasper Ford, but quite different. Not quite the same vibe. Good stuff, though. Good stuff. And it's really lovely to find something that you just didn't know about that really is your vibe. Also on Reddit, we had Consistent You 4215, who was watching repeats of the Monkees TV show. That's like as in the band The Monkees, just to be clear. And that was happening on Channel 4, and it was followed by the Cosgrove Hall adaptation of Weird Sisters, which they only watched because they were doing Macbeth in school and they recognized June Whitfield's voice as Nanny Ogg. It's an amazing cast, that Weird Sisters adaptation, by the way, if you've never seen it. Anyway, afterwards, I went straight to the library, says Consistent U4215, and devoured every Discworld book available. Yes, this is a common response to finding them. Lily Ferrangi on Twitter started by watching my friend in the Weird Sisters play in 1999. So not the animated adaptation, an amateur production of one of the adaptations by Stephen Briggs of the books for the stage, which I saw my first one in 1998. And then directed Mort in 1999. So same year. There you go. Lily, after seeing the friend in Weird Sisters in 1999, read everything in order over that summer. And the next year I was performing with her in Lords and Ladies as Perdita. Wow. What a rapid rise. And what a great role. Holy moly. Although not a big part in Lords and Ladies, but hopefully you went on to do Masquerade and you got to have a starring role. That would have been amazing. Now, look, I've been through so many of these stories, and I could go on and on. I just want to go through a few quick ones that I can sort of group into various categories. So plenty of people were given books by parents or loaned them by teachers or nicked them from siblings. Coconuts Don't Migrate on Twitter reported finding Equal Rights, in their words, left at my grandparents' place. Not quite sure who left it there. Just I conjured up a vision of, like, it's just sitting somewhere weird in the house and you found it. I hope that's what happened. But far and away, the most popular place that people said they found their first Pratchett book was at the library. So libraries still doing great work. Thank you, libraries and librarians. You are some of the greatest people on earth doing the most amazing work. And Pratchett loved libraries as well, as we well know. So thank you so much. A few people did say they will learn their first Discworld or Pratchett book by co-workers, including Nigel163 on Twitter, whose animation studio colleague introduced him to the audiobooks, and Elisa Vetmaniotti on Instagram, whose boss, who ended up being horrible, lent them Going Postal, and they said, I quit the job, kept the book. Good work. Good work. Got to be a perk for that somehow. Now, romance is also factored in to Pratchett Discovery. In fact, I'm laying my own cards on the table. I introduced my own partner to Terry Pratchett. I mean, I'd been doing the podcast for a little while when we met, and I think I started her on Hogfather because she really loves Christmas. But then she's gone on to read The Witches, and now she's reading Tiffany Aching. So it's going well. She's a big reader, so she reads a lot of other books too, and she's spacing out the Pratchetts, which I think is probably a good idea. But anyway, we had other people talked about this as well. Sarah Loftus started with Feet of Clay after finding it on my boyfriend's shelf while looking for something to read. Then I went back to the start and read them all in order. After almost 6 years, he left, but I kept the books and the Clarecraft bookends, which seems like a fair swap. Those Clarecraft bookends, quite possibly worth a bit of money now because I don't think you can get them anymore. So I think you've done quite well out of that exchange, Sarah. Meanwhile, Vorpalite on Reddit told us, a British writer I was trying to flirt with recommended them to me. She said to start with Guards, Guards, which on audiobook was fantastic. And they're still reading the books, but when asked how the flirting went, they responded to us, I'm not sure yet. Ask me again once I've finished the series. Except for Shepherd's Crown, she made me promise never to discuss it with her because she refuses to not have one last Pratchett book to read. Oh, unsurprisingly, actually, while we're talking about the Shepherd's Crown, no one reported starting with that, which would be a really weird choice. Although, I mean, I think based on our advice to read the blurbs and read the one you find most interesting, you know, for some people that might be the most interesting one. So it could be worthwhile starting there, but it would be a weird place to start there and then go back to the start, I think. So I'm not surprised. And this is a real common sentiment. There's a lot of people who haven't read Shepherd's Crown and don't want to, because they never want there to be not another Terry Pratchett book they haven't read. But I would urge you, if you really love Discworld, read it. Read it. Pratchett wrote it. He wanted it to be read. I haven't read it, but I kind of know it. I've been unable to avoid spoilers, so I think I'm going to read it probably soon before we get to it, just so that I can familiarize myself with it before we get there. But I don't know. I wasn't planning on touching on this episode, but I think you should read it. I really do. And he wrote so many other things that they're, you know, unless you go and track them all down, you can read all 41 Discworld books and you still won't have read all of the Discworld stuff that he wrote. You know, there's all the short stories, there's the Science of Discworld books, there's a bunch of supplementary material, there's all kinds of weird stuff out there. There's always something extra. Like, I fully expect we'll finish the podcast and we won't have read everything that Terry Pratchett ever wrote because he wrote so much. I get the idea that you don't want there to be never a new one that you haven't read. That's already the case. And you can always read them again. You know, lots of people here, when they're talking about their journeys for how they read their first book, they read one, they read another one, they read some other ones, and then they went back and they read them again in the right order, and they had a different experience. And I think reading them out of order, if you first read them in order, is also a fun experience. You know, read one just after another one in order you've never read before. So I'd encourage you to do it. But, you know, it's none of my business, right? You read or don't read whatever you want. But as a writer, I certainly know that if people had something I'd written and just chose not to read it, I wouldn't like that. And I don't. I talked in one of our previous bonus episodes about how it's folly to really think we understand what Pratchett really thought. But I don't think he'd want you to not read it. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that. Getting back to what people have read, though, quite a few people started with Terry's books for younger readers. There were a couple who started with The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents, which I think is a potentially great starting book. One or two started with the Johnny books, but most people in this category started with Truckers, Diggers, and Wings, which makes me very happy because they still are amongst my favorite of his books, particularly Truckers. I think all three of them are good, but I think Truckers is such a good start and works so well on its own that it is my favorite, but the other two are also really good. So that was cool. I was really pleased to see that. Several people reported either being turned off or afraid they'd get into trouble for choosing the books thanks to Josh Kirby's cover illustrations. Now, people who said this included a square plum 8930 on Reddit, who turned down a Guards, Guards, which was offered to them by a friend based entirely on the cover. They did come back for a later book and loved other books, of course. But the covers did lure a few people in. Rachel Bersma Plug, who I mentioned earlier, also said that she spotted The Color of Magic in the library and was simultaneously intrigued and repulsed by the titsy cover art. Which is such a great sentiment. I love that. Rachel also wanted to thank us, or really our dear departed friend, Cal Wilson, for the word titsy, which has become part of her family lexicon. So, GNU, Cal Wilson, thank you for introducing us all to the use of the word titsy for those covers. Other popular covers that seem to lure people in included Hogfather, Soul Music, and The Last Continent, which seem to be the less titsy ones, maybe. And not a lot of love for Paul Kidby there, which is unfortunate. I think we all love his art, but it is true that when you see it on the shelf, it's perhaps not as striking as those Josh Kirby ones that really lure us in. And I think that was part of what got me in. Certainly, I've read some other books because Josh Kirby did covers and I knew him from Terry Pratchett. And look, there were many, many more stories. So many, I can't possibly share them all or I'd be here forever. But I'd like to say a big thank you to everyone on Twitter, Reddit, Instagram, Facebook, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Discord who responded with their stories. You should go and have a look at the public responses. I'll put links in the episode notes so you can find them. There's a lot of great stuff there. You'll have as much of a ball going through them as I did. And you don't even need to compile them and decide which ones you're going to talk about in a podcast. So you can just enjoy them. It'll be great. So it turns out you can start in lots of wrong places. There isn't really a right place to start reading the Discworld or Terry Pratchett. Even if you don't love that first one, you might find there's something in it that lures you to try another one. But maybe you started somewhere we didn't mention. Let us know. We're on all those social media platforms and wherever you listen to the show too. So send it in. Tell us your story of where you started with Terry Pratchett and the Discworld. Now, Terry may have left us while he still had so many ideas and stories left to tell, but he gave us so many during his lifetime, and we still have a bunch left to discuss on this podcast, although only a few actual Discworld novels left to go. But if you didn't on the day itself, maybe make yourself a banana daiquiri, or perhaps bake a slice of lemon drizzle cake, he also loved that, and raise a glass or a slice to the author who's given us all so much. And maybe toss a coin or two to Alzheimer's Research, or the orangutans, or even your local library. And if you enjoyed hearing the stories of other Pratchett fans this episode, then maybe you'd also like to get along to the Australian Discworld Convention in July and meet some Discworld fans in person. We'll be there, and it'll be a ton of fun. Of course, if you're not in Australia, and that convention will be in Adelaide this year, there's also the International Discworld Convention in August in Birmingham, although unfortunately it is sold out, so you'll have to get on the waiting list for tickets if you're keen to go there. And there are conventions coming up next year in Germany and Ireland, and there's lots of local clubs and events all around the world. So have a look and see what you can find in your local area, wherever you are. It's a good time. And we're also looking forward to whatever else might be happening for the Year of Discworld that was announced in November 2023. We haven't heard a lot of stuff happening in conjunction with that yet. The Terry Pratchett Day announcement was the first time they used the 40 Years of Discworld logo for something else. But who knows, there's going to be some other stuff and we're waiting on tenterhooks for what it might be. We had the announcement of the role-playing game. We've had the announcement of the new cover editions being published in America. So I'm sure there's some more stuff. Oh, actually, we have had one bit of news. There's a new book coming, Designing Discworld, written by Paul Kidby, all about his long-term collaboration with Terry Pratchett making art about Discworld. So that is going to be an interesting book. It's coming out in November. Apparently, it's going to have lots of art we've never seen, and it's going to have stories behind the art as well. So I think that's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to that one. And I guess, you know, I'm also looking forward to, now that it's been established there's going to be a theme for each Terry Pratchett Day, what will the theme be in 2025? I don't know. Maybe it'll be time to ask, if you've already read every Pratchett, who do you read next? I don't really think that's something that would be the theme of Terry Pratchett Day, but it is a good theme. And probably we'll do a bonus episode about that. We've talked about many different ways of doing that, Liz and I. So I'm sure we'll find a way and we'll do that at some point. As for us, we know things haven't been quite on track with Pratchett these last few months, but we're working on it. We'll definitely be back next month. Watch our social media for confirmation of the book or story as we get the schedule back under control. Not 100% sure what's happening next month, but we will let you know in advance. So keep an eye out for that. And thanks so much for listening, following, subscribing to the podcast. Even when things aren't going according to plan, we want to make sure we can show up every month for you, listener. And if you'd like to help us keep going, you can subscribe or donate, or you can just tell your friends, whom you've definitely now hooked on Pratchett, about the podcast, using some inspiration from this episode, maybe. But you'll find out all the details about how you can support us on our website at PratchettPodcast.com. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to this weird bonus extra episode. And until next time, remember, 4 bananas chopped, 2 scoops of vanilla ice cream, 0.5 liter of milk, 100 milliliters whipped double cream, and 1/4 cup of coconut rum. Cheers, Terry. You've been listening to Pratchett, the monthly Terry Pratchett Book Club podcast with Pratchetter Ben McKenzie. That's me. Pratchett is produced and edited by me in the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Our music is by David Ashton. You can find us on social media as Pratchett or Pratchett Podcast, and you can listen to past episodes and support the production of new ones via PratchettPodcast.com. Join the conversation for this episode using the hashtag PratchettDay2024.
Pratchett is brought to you by Splendid Chaps Productions. We make entertainment for your ears, like the Doctor Who podcast Splendid Chaps and time travel comedy series Night Terrors. To find out more, visit SplendidChaps.com.